You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Yale Strom's life credits are many. Here are just a few. He has composed original music for theater, film, and television, and his musical compositions have been performed by many orchestras. He is a professor and artist in residence in the Jewish Studies program at San Diego State University and has 15 CDs to his credit. Today, we're going to talk about his latest, Shimmering Light. Yale, along with Elizabeth Swartz, co-producer of the project, are my guests on this edition of Americana Music Profiles. Well, Yale and Elizabeth, welcome to the podcast this afternoon. It's an honor to get to chat with you folks.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Greg. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome.
We're looking forward to it.
So we've got, you've got a neat, interesting new CD project that we want to talk about. But I thought, if you don't mind, if we jump back just a little bit, Yale, give me a little bit of background about yourself. I know you've done a lot of neat things and been playing music for a while. And so maybe for some of the folks who don't know who you are yet, let's give them a little bit about who you are, and then we'll move into the new CD.
Okay, well, my name is Yale Strom, and I've been an artist for many decades now, working in both film, music, theater, photography, and literature. And people can, you know, find me on the web, just yalestrom.com,
right,
and read about the books, et cetera. I've done a lot of work specifically looking at and exploring Jewish culture in Eastern Europe, as well as Roma culture in Eastern Europe, and specifically looking at the folk music of the two peoples and how they, you know, came together sometimes. And so I was initially interested in the music, per se, the notes, the music, the scales, et cetera. But then I really became more interested in the culture of the music, what makes the people play a certain way, and their travels, and other, how do they get along, don't get along with their neighbors, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So and I'm specifically talking about klezmer music, K-L-E-Z-M-E-R, but it expanded to other folk musics of Eastern Europe. And so a lot of my work has focused on some aspect of these cultures, Jewish culture, Roma culture, in these regions. But I've expanded. I've done work in the Balkans and stuff about Western Europe, et cetera. And, but I guess that's what kind of brings me to why I'm speaking to you.
Why the klezmer? What was it about that that fascinated you?
Well, it's the music of the Jews that we call Ashkenazim, Central and Eastern European Jews. You know, every culture has folk music, so this is the folk music of these particular Jews, where my family comes from. It lives this as well. Several generations they have come, you know, before we all come from somewhere in the Middle East as Semites. But definitely many hundreds of years in Central and Eastern Europe. And music is a very important part of anybody's culture. It's an identifying mark. And so I was curious about this music. I grew up with Jewish music in the home, in the synagogue, singing songs, hearing some music on the records, and as I said, going, you know, hearing various tunes and for various Jewish holidays. But I became more interested in it when the revival, so to speak, when American young Jews had been playing bluegrass or jazz,
right,
you know, had been playing everything but their own folk music, kind of were confronted by non-Jews saying, hey, well, what about your own folk music?
You right, know, yeah.
What is it? And slowly but surely from the mid-70s onwards, several bands, several people were doing research and got interested in it. And being a violinist and just loving all kinds of music, I got interested. I wanted to join a a klezmer band in San Diego, and it just didn't work out. You know, they didn't need another violinist, whatever. And so that really was kind of the impetus. I said, well, okay, I instead of joining, I'll form my own band. But I wanted to form it with some unique repertoire that would not be as easily found here in the United States, even in the archives. And that was perhaps melodies, tunes that are unknown to us because they're only in the memories of those few Holocaust survivors or even Roma musicians who remember them, or maybe some archives we don't know about in Eastern Europe. And so that was it. That was a kind of a simple, you know, trajectory. I just bought this one-way ticket and began the research, and of course, many decades later, I've done many other things, but that was kind of it. I was curious about knowing more about my own culture, where my grandparents come from and great-grandparents, and the music was the portal into which I sort of became obsessed with knowing more about Yiddish culture.
Do you find that it is sort of still contained within the Jewish culture, even in this country, or is that style of music starting to bleed out into other cultures and other influence other styles of music now?
Oh, it definitely has bled out, so to speak, as you say. Let's take Europe, for example. In the last 25 years, for example, Roma music has become much more popular, particularly Roma music from the Balkans. It has a very strong rhythm, strong sounds, because it's pushed by tuba, trombones, and trumpets. So young people, you know, because young people help push culture along, and what they buy, what they like, what they attend, kind of sets a certain tone for the society at large during that time. And so so this music had elements of klezmer music. Some of it was klezmer melodies. Of course, just the revival of klezmer itself. There were many non-Jews, forget about the Jews who sort of decided to rediscover their roots. But non-Jews are saying, wow, this is interesting music about people that my parents or grandparents or great-grandparents talked about, whether in a positive way or sadly in a negative way. And they obviously had more than just a little influence. They had maybe a great influence on my particular community, my village, my town, my city, in many ways. So who are these people? And these young Gentiles in Germany, Poland, France, even parts of Italy, and then, of course, you know, the rest of Eastern Europe, who became interested in this kind of exotic culture for them. It was an exotic of people that's not really here that much, or very few of them are here. And, of course, in the United States as well, I would say it's actually more integrated in Europe because it's more of a European music. It's the roots of it are Semitic, Middle Eastern, and then the European sounds. Where in America, it's definitely something that was tame from across the ocean. Jews brought it with them, as well as Slavs and so forth. And you do hear it. I mean, you hear, there was a period of time in the 20s to the 40s where Jewish composers and musicians and African-American composers and musicians and lyricists were sometimes combining the two elements of their genres into what some might call Yiddish swing or jazz melodies that had Jewish lyrics in terms of about Jewish culture, often humorous, but being sung by and written by African-Americans like Cab Calloway, for example. Or Slim Galliard, for example.
Right.
So it has become more popular. Is it a mainstream folk music genre? No. But you hear it now on television and films and podcasts and wherever young people get popular culture, anybody gets popular culture.
Sure.
So it's not so unusual. But, you know, we're still trying to always enlighten the public who says, klezmer, I've never heard the word, but I like the music. It sounds intriguing, interesting.
Well, and I appreciate you bringing that point to light, because in the Americana genre, you know, we the early settlers coming into the country and then moving into the mountains. And, you know, we have the bluegrass and the folk and string music kind of coming from that. But then you also have that music being influenced by the African-American slave community in the earlier days. And why not also that music being influenced by the Jewish community coming into this country as well? And so really kind of the Americana bluegrass music is sort of a big melting pot of all of the cultures kind of being extracted, even if it wasn't consciously, you know, people hearing music on the streets or in the fields or wherever it may have been coming from. And when they sat down to create their own music, they're being influenced and don't even realize it. So I appreciate the connection to there.
Right. Well, I think a lot of Americans who love what they call in the American songbook, you know, the great tunes from the 20s
right.
to the 40s, so many, a large majority of them written by Jews, whether they wrote the music or they wrote the music and the lyrics.
Right, okay.
And, you know, it's... And they took certain keys, minor keys in particular, certain kind of notation structure that people just take for granted. It's part of the American folk music.
Right,
Jews
right.
bring it. And, of course, Jews are, Gentiles and everybody else in between love these songs. They're some of the most popular songs in the world. I tell my students the most recorded song in the world. The most recorded song in the world is a song written by two Jews. And it's called "Somewhere Over the Rainbow." It's been recorded more times than any, more languages, more than any national anthem of the world.
Yeah.
And we won't talk about all the Jewish influences and just the cultural parts about it in terms of the lyrics. But so So maybe klezmer hasn't really influenced directly.
Right. But.
American music, but certainly Jewish culture has.
Sure, yeah. And you mentioned some of your students. Do I understand correctly that if not presently, you also did some time teaching at Yale, is that right?
No, that's my namesake, Yale. No, I taught at NYU.
NYU, okay, I'm sorry, right.
NYU,
right. Yeah.
And I currently teach. I currently teach at San Diego State University.
Okay, all right. Easy to make the faux pas there, but I remember you telling me that you were doing some instruction too. So that's cool. So to kind of bring it full circle, you have a new record that's a holiday, I suppose we'll call it Hanukkah, obviously being a Jewish holiday, but out kind of in the summertime. What was the motivation for that?
Well, the motivation to do this recording with our label ARC really was from Elizabeth. I'll let her jump in here now. I certainly had a lot of creative ideas, and I'll talk about those, but the motivation came from Elizabeth.
Well, to be honest, I think every recording artist gets to a certain point after the third, fourth, fifth, I think in our case, 13th release, where you say it's time to do my Christmas album, but we all celebrate Christmas, so
right, yeah.
I mean, that's actually not entirely untrue. In fact, that really was one of the major motivating factors. But I was just listening to one of my favorite world music stations when they were, right around Hanukkah, and I thought, wow, these are wonderful songs, and I think some of these recordings are, maybe 20 years old. So I thought, wow, I think it's time, it's about time for someone to put out a new recording. So those were factors, but to be honest, we had also, along the road, met so many of these wonderful musicians who aren't part of our daily ensemble, Yale Strom and Hot Pastrami. And we really wanted to work with them. And so we had separately been thinking about how could we do a recording that was all strings and vocals. And those two separate streams sort of came together in this one idea.
Are these original songs, or were these songs that are, you mentioned earlier, songs that had been in the community for a while, or is it a combination of both? What's the theme of the songs on the record?
Well, the songs are all songs to celebrate, commemorate the festival of Hanukkah.
Right, okay.
And, you know, which is a festival around issues of persecution, resistance, and freedom, which, you know, is really not a seasonal
right.
construct.
Right.
And so some of the songs are hundreds and hundreds of years old,
okay.
coming from communities in the Middle East and Jewish communities in the Balkans and the Iberian Peninsula, in and moving throughout history up until our final song on the CD, which is an original, brand new song. But some of these songs, I would say, are short or really have their structural composed line. And we are always very heavy on improvisation, but just on all of our recordings. But what Yale did specifically with this was really create formal arrangements, sometimes composing ancillary material to make the songs fuller and longer and give us more of a pad for exploring, which we do.
Mm-hmm. Are these songs that you, are you going to be playing them or touring with this specifically, or do these get mixed into the other things that you do? How will you be presenting this to the listening audience?
Well, ideally, we'd love to tour playing, you know, all the tunes on this album with the band, and we hope to. We have played a couple times. What we just recently did in San Diego, we played a full concert with them, and also in Germany, we played with the ensemble. But some of the tunes, yeah, they're just good tunes, we'd be silly not to. A good song is a good song. It can't just be played for, you know, the 4 weeks that we consider the holiday
right,
season.
Yeah.
So I will definitely play many of them at different times of the year. And hopefully with members of this, of you know, as we call it, the Broken Consort, Yale Strom's Broken Consort, but even with Hot Pastrami, you know. So we'll definitely be playing these around the world. For as long as we keep playing music.
And are these performed in Yiddish or American or a combination? When you do them live, will they be all in a native
yeah.
tongue?
Yeah.
All of the above, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, so songs were, the original lyrics of some songs are in Yiddish, and so Elizabeth sings in Yiddish. Some are in Ladino, which is the language of the Jews of the Iberian and North African region. And she sings those, and then there's a song in Hebrew. And there's some in English as well. So she sings in all those languages. So there's one original song called A Fool Over Yonder in English, just like the title is. A Hanukkah song with very...
broader
themes dealing with society, dealing with mm-hmm. politics, dealing with our communities.
Yeah.
You know. And then there's actually one instrumental piece that I composed, kind of a you could call it sort of a tone poem, called Bashir Mizmor, and that means, you know, into celebration of song, and I'm very proud of. And so those are the two original pieces, and as Elizabeth said, I added a number of parts to many of the tunes, and of course, then everyone brings their own creativity, because the improvisation really goes all over the place, from
okay.
bluegrass to classical to jazz, swing to Middle Eastern to klezmer to Hasidic. I think it's a real treat for the listener. I don't think people will get bored. I'm almost positive they won't.
Yeah.
Well, that's always our goal.
Yeah, right. Well, because every tune is very unique, and an artist brings something special to it. So we're very proud of that.
If I, I just want to add that with the exception of one person in the ensemble, we're all Americans, and we grew up here, and we have, our musical frame of reference that comes from growing up in the United States. So you hear all those different elements as, very specifically the people on this recording are not strictly Eastern European or Middle Eastern musicians. I mean, we're really heavily steeped in bluegrass and jazz and blues and Texas swing and these other elements that are really distinctly American. So, we can't separate our own identities. In fact, we wanted to celebrate our own identities in exploring this, because I think that's a very American experience.
Sure.
I mean, this is you go to Europe, which I think, or travel around the world, which I think more Americans, frankly, should do. And you find yourself in a town, sitting in a house that's about 500 years older than your country, and you realize how young we are, and how much we have to grow and learn about the many cultures that make us American.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're Native American, your family came from somewhere else.
Sure. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. Where did the term broken consort come from?
Consort?
Yeah. How did that
well,
become the name of the group?
Right. Well, I was thinking, I was looking at the ensemble that I had put together, and it was, strings and plectrum instruments, and so I was just looking, one of my books, and I, to see what that, what is the musical term, and it's called the consort. Then I was reading further, they said there's a term not often used, but was used in the Baroque period and then Renaissance period of classical music in Europe, with the broken consort. And that just means, so you have all these instruments are the same. So you have the strings.
Same family.
And, and you have the plectrum, which are strings too, just played differently than with a bow. And what broke the continuity was the voice. It's Elizabeth's voice that is the
yes, my destructive voice.
the broken voice, right? So it just kind of had a cool ring to it.
Sure,
anybody who names it, anyone who gives a title to anything is always why. Sometimes it's just simply because you like how it sounds.
Yeah.
Not only do I like the sound, but it does define the ensemble truthfully and accurately.
Well, we also. We were also attracted to sort of the implication of breaking up something formal.
Yeah.
And being a little disruptive, injecting a little surprise into it. So it seemed like one of those moments where all the spheres came into alignment. And it was just the right name.
Yeah,
I mean, because some people will recognize a couple of the Hanukkah songs, I'm sure, wherever they are, whether American Jews or Israelis or European Jews or whatever. But as Elizabeth just said, the melody is traditional, but that's all that's traditional about it because of how I arranged it and the improvisation. So there'll be a piece that you say, I know this tune, all of a sudden, like, what? A viola takes it out into left field, and then in comes the oof. And takes it somewhere else. So we certainly have broken the tradition on every single tune that's on this album.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I spent some time listening to it, and I really appreciate what you did with it. I'm not real familiar with that style of music, but I found it fun to listen to, and I could feel the Americana flavors sneaking in and the different treatment of the string instruments. And so I think that it certainly lends itself to be entertaining to a broader audience than just the ethnic groups that may know the songs, as they were. But really wish you guys well with it. I think, in case we haven't mentioned the name is Shimmering Lights, and folks can get it now. Is it out already or not out yet?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, it's not yet, just out, and it's on the ARC, A-R-C label out of England, and they can, you know.
Available wherever you would get a hard CD or
stream it.
And if folks wanted to learn more about you, Yale, or the group itself, or your music, what's the best way to find you on the web? What's web addresses or all that kind of good stuff?
My name, Yale Strom, YaleStrom.com.
Great.
And emails there, and all the information on what we're doing. And my website will connect to Elizabeth's. Hers is Voice of Klezmer, all three words, V-O-I-C-E-O-F, Klezmer, KLEZMER.com.
Cool.
So either her website or my website, they connect. And they can learn about, Yale Strom's Broken Consort, Shimmering Lights, and other CDs that we've done previously and future recordings. This is not our last.
Yeah, good.
I'm already thinking new ones. But we're very proud.
You just heard me knocking wood.
So we're proud of this one, and people have heard it live. Certainly have enjoyed it, and so we hope that all the listeners to this podcast will go out and stream at least one tune, if not all 10 tunes.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you all very much. This has been neat learning about it, and I feel like I got some history lesson along with it. So that's always helpful too, to feel like I've learned something new from folks like you guys. So thank you very much, and we wish you the best with it.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks. We'll keep in touch. Thank you so much for your efforts.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.